Okay, I think probably I should begin. Since people normally know I always run over time anyway, so if I start 10 minutes late, so if I die, we're not going to finish everything that we want to finish. The title was supposed to be, the title would come out a little bit better here, when the two women of Mishle, when men were real men and women were actually real metaphors. And I guess I have a few goals, just sort of lay them out and what I want to try to accomplish today. One is to look at the first nine prakim of Sefer Mishle, which are essentially a book in and of themselves. You would know that because in the 10th parak of Mishle, it says, Gam Eila Mishle Shlomo, or something like that. So you know that essentially it's a separate section of the book, and the style changes altogether. In addition, there's what's called an inclusio, or a literary envelope. Chapter 1 begins, or I should say chapter 9 of Mishle ends off pretty much where chapter 10 begins. The same words are repeated, so you know you've created a literary unit. In fact, Mishle is famous for the fact that it has separate sections. One of them is written by a king named Lemuel, who Chazal say was Shlomo, and then there's the Eshet Chayil section. So there are actually little sections. Mishle really is something of an anthology of wisdom literature, and the first piece in it is, in my opinion, probably one of the most beautiful pieces in all of Tanakh, which it focuses on two women. So that's why I call this year the two women of Mishle. So one goal is just to sort of go through that first section of Mishle and try to get a good understanding of what it is trying to accomplish. But also, what I'm going to try to do is to show that when you read Tanakh, there is a challenge, especially when you're reading the wisdom books, the poetic books, which is that what appears to the eye is not always what things really are. That is, if you're dealing with metaphors, not only could something actually be a metaphor when it looks not like a metaphor at all, but sometimes you could have metaphors inside of metaphors and things get really complicated. The most classic example of that, and I've given Shir in Toronto before on Shir HaShirim, but Shir HaShirim is the case where, I mean, you could read through the whole thing and it's a nice love story, end of story. Or maybe it's not such a nice love story because the boy and the girl wind up not really being together at the end of the book. We believe the book is a metaphor for the relationship, by and large, relationship between man and between Bnei Yisrael and God. How that relationship is understood depends whether you're a Kabbalist or whether you're a medieval exegete or whether you're fighting against Christianity or whatever it is. But by and large, most people stick to the idea that it's a metaphor between the relationship. The girl stands for Knesset Yisrael, and the boy, the beloved, stands for Hashem. But nothing in the book tells you that. There are other places in Tanakh where also I think where you could read text and it looks straightforward and it makes sense in a straightforward way. And yet I think by reading it in a straightforward way, you could really miss the point. Now, most of the time, you don't have to worry about it. For instance, let's take Eicha. So Eicha, the beginning of Eicha, so Yerushalayim is compared to a Nida, right? She sits back, she is groaning or sighing, all of her lovers are abandoning her, she has no more friends. But we know at the very beginning what the story is, because instead of having a metaphor, we have a simile. Yerushalayim hayita kinida, you know, it was like a nida. So once the simile is set up, then we could start going at the metaphor. We're not lost because we have the foundation. We have something which ties us into, it's like the equation solver, plug X in for Y. And once you know how to translate X for Y, so then you can read in and really immerse yourself in the metaphor and you don't get lost. In Shir HaShirim, there never is an X for a Y. There are little hints at it, but that's a different show altogether. But I want to show you a case where you can read this a section, and I'm going to start by Yishayahu. So I'm going to shoot for my second goal, which is to talk about, we're on page number two, with the two pictures at the bottom. And I'm going to read you a passage from Yishayahu, and I'm going to try to prove that not all is what meets the eye. Vayomer Hashem, so Yishayahu is talking. Actually, I'll start from the pasuk right above that, which is the chapter before this is talking about how God is not amused by people's haughtiness. Most people say it was during the time of Amatsya, or actually Amatsya's son, Uzziahu. Nobody knows for sure, but the problem seems to be the haughtiness of Bnei Yisrael and how they hold themselves so high, and God will bring them low and show them what the reality really is. And then in chapter Gimel, after the famous Mashal HaKerem, the vineyard metaphor, so Yishayahu lets loose in a way which I always find a little bit uncomfortable, especially when I'm teaching girls. Vayomer Hashem, Yan ki gavhu benot Zion, because of the ego of the daughters of Zion. Vatelachna netuyot garon. I'm sorry, I included the Kri and the Ketiv. Just read the second word. Netuyot garon. They go with their necks. Can you imagine? With their necks uncovered. Or maybe bent. Netuyot garon. Maybe like they're always looking around. You know, they're always wanting to see what's going on. Umsakarot enayim. Their eyes are all over the place. Not down on the earth where they belong. Haloch v'tatov telachna, when they walk, there's a nice clapping sound, like drums. I guess they have like those clogs or things that make noise. Uvraglehem ta'akasna, apparently some kind of bells on their legs. V'sipach Adonai kodkod benot Zion. Because of this, God is going to essentially bear the heads, the skulls of these daughters of Zion. V'ashem patem yarei, will cause wounds to come onto their bare scalps. Vayomahu, at those days, Yasir Adonai et Tiferet Akasim, God will remove all of this glory. Obviously, it's being used sarcastically. Ha'akasim are these bells. Ha'shvisim, ha'saharonim, these are different types of accoutrements that women would wear. Nobody knows exactly what they are. We could take guesses. Ha'netifot, v'hasherot, v'hara'alot, I don't know, head scarves or whatever it is. All kinds of women paraphernalia. Ha'peirim va'tsa'adot, the word sa'adot is walking, so maybe it's like fancy shoes. Va'kishurim, perhaps some kind of chains or necklaces. U'batei ha'nefesh, that we know what that is. U'batei ha'nefesh is a necklace, since the nefesh is where you breathe from. V'halachashim, apparently some type of maybe bell that made a little whispering sound. Va'taba'ot, and the rings, v'nizmei ha'af, which means that back then girls were wearing nose rings, so I guess sometimes what goes around comes around again. Yeah, we can't say, although you could say no, I can tell you it's not from because Yishayahu doesn't like it. But I'm not sure you can make that conclusion that was a problem in and of itself. V'machlatzot, v'matafot, v'mitpachot, v'charitim, v'gilyonim, v'asniim, v'atsnifot, v'aridim. V'haya tachat bosem, and instead of their perfume, makihiyeh, they will be, mak is like a foulness. V'tachat chagora, instead of their nice belts, nikfa. I think, which is kind of like a nakedness or something that's torn. V'tachat ma'aseh mikshah korcha, and they will be bald instead of some kind of fancy headdress. V'tachat p'tigil machloret sack, instead of this fancy dress, they'll be wearing sackcloth. Ki tachat yofi, the word ki is short for kivya, which is a burn. Burns instead of beauty. So when you're like, what's his problem? You know, that's like, if you're teaching this to girls, it's like, you know, a little over the top. So you can say, I mean, the only way to read this, I had two pictures here. So over here I got a bunch of frum women dominate the kotel, but I'm not even sure if they would satisfy. If we take Yishayahu's words literally, I'm not sure these women dominating at the kotel with their head covered, I don't think they would satisfy. I see these women dressed in the chadors. I think maybe Yishayahu would start to relax if he saw the women dressed in black with their eyes pointed down. And as we're reading Sefer Yishayahu, it kind of bothers, not only is it difficult to teach, I mean, especially, you know, in a modern Orthodox world where, I mean, there is an idea that women have some kind of forward movement. But even in Tanakh, women weren't put down in such a place where they weren't able to look up. I mean, it's really almost an extreme Islam, you know, kind of situation. So the question is, and not only that, what's with Yishayahu? He's got all these problems to deal with. And this is what he's focused on, that the women are too uppity? And maybe there is an issue of, you know, I doubt they came close to the MTV generation that we have today, where, you know, you can't even barely watch TV to see what men and women are dressing like and acting like. But still, it seems a little over the top, doesn't it? And then we get to that next line, which unfortunately, I'm sorry, do you have a question? Has anybody taught this? Has anybody learned this and then been like uncomfortable with it? Or is it just me? Am I inserting my own sense of, you know, feminist orthodoxy on this view? I mean, it's kind of rough. Like, how dare they look up when they walk through the streets? You know, get them back into the kitchen where they belong. Does anybody ever have this problem when you read this section, that it's a little bit much? I guess there's no problem here, in which case my shear is over. It always bothered me, and then I get to the next line then, and it bothered me less, and I erased it a little bit because I used a font that didn't come out so well, and it says, Matayach becherev yipolu, your warriors. It's on the second page, about seven lines down. The words are slightly erased. Matayach becherev yipolu, your soldiers, your numerous people, will fall by the sword. Gvuratcha, and your strength. b'milchama, will die in battle. Ve'anu ve'avlu p'tacheha, and her openings will be anu ve'avlu. They will be, from the word ona'a, they will be like somebody who's lost somebody. Somebody who's, what's the word for ona'a? It's before the Shiva. It's a state of mourning. A horrible state of mourning. V'nikata la'aretz teshev, and she will, nikata, I guess in this sense, barren and lonely, be pushed back to the ground. Does that remind anybody of anything? That lashon of the woman being pushed and sitting backwards on the ground. Does that remind you of anything? I actually mentioned it a little bit before. That's the metaphor from Eicha, right? She'll sit on the ground. And also, what is matayach b'cherev yipolo? That's not talking about a girl. I guess it could be talking about a girl if her husband's a soldier. But all of a sudden, we're using the feminine language, and yet we're talking about her soldiers falling, her strength being lost in battle, and her gates, her openings, which is really, I mean, either it's a very hyper, you know, explicit language, or it's not talking about a girl at all. What does it sound like, actually? What does it sound like? Or cities in general. It does. It sounds like a city. It doesn't sound like a girl anymore at all. So what if all of this adornment were the tapestries hanging from the walls, were the shields that dressed up every window, was the sense of ego that nothing could ever happen to me, the looking around as if I have nothing to fear, the lack of humbleness? What if it's a metaphor? Now, I can't prove it, to be honest. It could be a girl. I assure you, I've spoken to rabbis about this, and some of them have rejected what I said outright, and feel free to reject it also. But I wonder whether Yeshayahu has better things to do than just talk about girls and how they're behaving in an appropriate way or not appropriate way, and whether he's talking about the fall, the future potential fall of the state of Israel because of the ego of her cities and her inhabitants, which fits much more closely with everything that's been going on before and after in Yeshayahu. Do you see what I mean? Any comments on this? I feel like I'm talking too much and people, you have anything? I know I have a microphone. If you want, you can borrow the microphone and then you get to sound as loud as I sound. Let's go now and take a look at page 3. And in page 3, we're introduced, I've introduced you to passages from chapter 5, 6, 7, and 9. And I'm trying to make a point that there is a woman. She's called an Isha Zara. If you take a look at Mishlei Hey I Aleph to Zion, that's on the top right-hand side, it says, B'ni l'chokhmati akshiva, my son, pay attention to my wisdom, l'tvunati hatos necha, turn your ears to my knowledge, or my understanding, l'shmur mizimot, to make sure that you understand plans, that is, to do the right thing, v'datz v'techa yinsaru, and to make sure your lips guard wisdom. Kinofet titofna siftei zara v'chalak mishemen chika. Because her lips, the lips of this foreign woman, the Shisa Zara, they drip with nofet, which is kind of like a honey or a type of a spice. The chalak mishemen chika, and her mouth is, bless you, her wife is, bless you, her mouth is as slippery as oil. Vacharita mara kala'ana, and the end of her will be as bitter as wormwood, which is absinthe. Chada kecherev piot, her lips are actually sharp as swords. Ragleha yordot mavet, her legs drip with death. Sha'ol tsa'adeha yitmochu, her legs support the underworld. Orechayim pentfaleh, she will never, the way of life will never be straight with her. Na'u maglotel lo tedan, the movement of her legs will never be known. That is, there's no future for her, which is stay away. This woman, this Isha Zara, is mentioned multiple times. Perek Vav, and we're going to get to some of these. We won't have enough time to explore all of, say, for Mishlei, Halavai that we did, or all of the first 9 chapters. But if you notice, she's Lishmorcha Me'eshet Ra from the evil woman in Perek Vav. In the middle column down below, the Shomra Me'isha Zara, there's that foreign woman. There's the Eshek Silut, the same woman at the end of the thing. There's also one in Perek Bet, which I didn't bring down. And what bothered me when I was first reading Kinofet Titofna Siftei Zara, which sounds pretty tough. I mean, you could really, it has an evocative sense. Right? Her lips are, you know, you can imagine the makeup and the slippery tongue, which has not, by the way, slippery tongue in Tanakh usually means it's not talking about a real thing. It's actually a metaphor for what, you know? The word chalakot, the daber chalakot, to speak slipperiness. So that's another way of saying in Tehillim, it's another way of saying, does anybody know what that means? What's that? Yeah, to lie. Exactly right. A slippery tongue is lying, which means it's a metaphor, not that she has oil on her tongue, but that she'll say all the right things to you, and you won't see it coming. You'll slip down, and you'll get completely seduced by it, because her lips drip with this honey. And what bothered me about it is I recognized those words from somewhere. Kinofet titofna sute zara is a quote from Shir HaShirim. Take a look over on the left-hand side. The way the guy describes his beloved girl in chapter 4 is, Nofet titofna siftotaya chala, your lips drip with tofet, my beautiful beloved. Devash v'chalav, honey and milk, tachat l'shonech, is beneath your tongue. Well, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? You know, especially if the authors are the same, or at least the school is the same, and it's coming out of the wisdom of Shlomo. So how could he be using, if he's talking about something literal, how could he be using the same expression to be speaking about the most dangerous type of real girl, and then, assuming Shir HaShirim is talking about a real girl, to use the same expression to talk about the best of what that girl has to offer? Is it good or is it bad? But if I use a little mathematics and I say, if I know Shir HaShirim is a metaphor for something else, and it uses Nofet Titofna, then if I use the same, it's like side angle side in geometry, if I use the same words over in Mishlei, might that be talking about something else as well? So of course, then of course you have to believe that Shir HaShirim is a metaphor. But if you buy into that, the question is, if Shlomo is using the same Lashon in diametrically opposed ways, and one is a metaphor, might the other one be a metaphor which has something to say as well? Except the nice thing about a metaphor is it can have multiple meanings. You know, if I say her eyes were like the ocean, well, it could be that I was drowning in them, or it could be they just were a nice color of gray, or it could be, I don't know, it could be a number of things. That's the nice thing about metaphor, is it's so flexible in its understanding. What's that? You don't like my metaphor? What's that? Oh, because when I tried that on my wife, she said, oh, you probably stole that from Shir HaShirim. Okay, anyway. What I want to do now is I want to explore this negative woman. And I want to see whether there's metaphor there. So I'm claiming that this negative woman is not a negative woman at all, that she's actually a metaphor for something else. Of course, if I'm right, the challenge is to figure out what it is she's a metaphor for. But let's take a look at the largest piece of text we have for this negative woman and see if we can make something out of it. And remember, it's a book of Mishlei. It's trying a book, on one hand, Mishlei means metaphors, proverbs. On the other hand, it's trying to teach life lessons. So let's see if we can get something out of it. Nitzor b'ni mitzvat avicha, this is on page number 4. Guard the commandments of your father. Do you have the place? Page number 4. How are we doing time-wise? We have to stop at 12? Okay. Good luck with that. Nitzor b'ni mitzvat avicha v'al titosh torat imecha. Don't leave off the teachings of your father or mother. Koshrem al libecha. See, these are metaphors. So if we're inside a metaphor, that means that we're in a metaphor and a metaphor. But I don't want to confuse things too much. Koshrem al libecha tamid. Tie them to your heart. Ondeim al gargotecha. Put them as jewels on your throat. When you go, they will keep you settled. And if you keep this wisdom, you'll be able to go to sleep and be guarded. And when you wake up, you should talk about all these things I'm about to teach you. That'll keep you safe throughout your life. Because, well, you know this famous pasuk. What's interesting is it seems what we'd expect is a moral lesson about the Torah in general, and yet all of a sudden we get into this woman. Lishmorcha me'eshet rai, will guard you from this evil woman. Michelkat lashon nochriya, from the slipperiness of a foreign woman's tongue. Al tachmod yafia bilvavecha, do not desire her beauty. Va'al tikachcha ba'afapeha, and do not be taken in by her eyebrows. That's like this, you know? I'm not very good at seducing people, so you get the idea, right? What's that? The batting of the eyes, yeah. Well, the eyelid. In this case, I guess they were into eyebrows as opposed to the eyelashes, but it's the same idea. Afapea is eyelids, not eyebrows. Oh, so good. It's even better. So it's better. Good. Bad translation by me. Kibad isha zona ad kikar lachem. A difficult pasuk, but what it means is, for the sake of a prostitute woman. Now, she's not really a prostitute. That's not how it's being used here, any more than in Bahar it was being used to describe, or Emor was being, when it says a woman was tiznet tachat avia, it doesn't mean she was a prostitute. It just means she was behaving in a sexually inappropriate way. Kibad isha zona ad kikar lachem, which means a man is willing to pay off his last piece of bread to get that woman. Because even if he has nothing in his pocket, and he knows he's about to go bankrupt, he'll reach in and take out that last piece of bread and spend it on her. That's what he'll do. And all the guys are thinking, Okay. I'm sorry. Ve'eshet ish nefesh yikara tatsu. Now, we seem to be talking about a married woman, dafka, adultery. That is, a soul will be hunted or trapped by a woman that belongs to somebody else's husband. Why? Hayachate ish eish b'cheiko. It's beautiful poetry, by the way, if you read it. Just beautiful Hebrew. Hayachate ish eish b'cheiko ubgadav lo tisarafna. Can a man hold fire, meaning coals, in his bosom and not be burned? How's that for a nice metaphor, right? Right? Because she is the hot coals, but obviously it means something else. It's referring to the sin. It's referring to everything. It's beautiful. Im yihalech ish al gechalim. Can a man walk on coals, v'raglav lo techavena, and his feet won't be burned? Kein habal eshet re'ehu lo yinakeh kol nogei haba. There's no way for you to come clean if you sleep with somebody else's wife. Why? And now he does this great little svara, which is just terrific. Lo yavuzu l'kanab ki ygnov. If a guy steals from you, nobody is going to feel shamed about him if the goal of his stealing was kirav, because he was hungry. That is, if a guy is hungry and he steals from you, it's a sin, you know, but you don't hate the guy. In fact, you're probably the opposite. You probably sympathize with the person for stealing. V'nimtzai yishalem shivatayim, but he's still a sinner and therefore will pay time seven. And call home beito yitom. Because he stole from you, he's going to wind up losing more than he ever wanted to gain in the first place. But at least I understand his motives. I'm not ashamed of him. I can't help him. Noefi shach hasar leiv. Somebody who sleeps with somebody else's wife, adulterates with a woman, is no intelligence whatsoever. Leiv meaning intelligence. Mashchin nafsho yasad. He's destroying his soul. Nega v'kalon yimtzal. Find nothing but shame and scorn. V'cherpato lo timacheh. And the shame that people find him would never be clean. Ki kinach hamad gaver. Which means, the poor guy understood his motivations, but this guy is just, there's no motive for it. There's nothing respectable about what's going on here, and therefore nobody will ever forgive him. But not only that, the most important person who won't forgive him is the guy's husband. Ki kinat chamat gever, because the jealousy of a husband is hot. Lo yachmol biyom nakam, he does not forgive. Lo yisa pnei kol chofer, you could pay him as much as you want. You could pay off the husband as much as you want. He will not take your bribe in order to forgive you for sleeping with his wife. Lo yovek ki tarbesh shochad, he will not agree no matter how much you're willing to pay him. Now, if we're just reading this text as it is, would you say it's a metaphor for something else, or would you say it's a piece of advice that you should not sleep with somebody else's wife? I mean, just the text as it reads, and that's essentially the body of the text. Is it literal? Is the text literal? Or would you say it's metaphoric? Just based on that page. What do you think? What's that? It's pretty literal, yeah. Why not? Mishlei's telling us, don't sleep with somebody else's wife. It's a great idea. That's a very important idea, and it goes through it in very great details. It uses evocative metaphors in and of itself, comparing her to hot, that hug that you think is so, well, hot, is hotter than you think, is actual fire. It's fantastic metaphors, but the metaphors are helping to understand the literal text that don't commit adultery. And I agree with you, in almost all of these cases, if you skip to page 5, we also seem to be talking about Nisha Zara as Nisha Zara. So if you look on the second column where it's highlighted, Lahatzilcha Nisha Zara Minochriyam Reh Hachlika, Hauzevet Aluf Noreh, who leaves her husband to go follow, and then all you'll find is death and destruction by sleeping with her. And yet what makes us feel that there may be more to it than meets the eye is that if you notice, Lahatzilcha Miderech Ra is compared to Lahatzilcha Misha Zara. Even rhymes. Do you see that? Which means the flow is weird. If we read through it, and we don't really have enough time to read through it, but if you read through Mishlei, so it's talking about you got to keep the Torah, you got to fear God, you got to do all the right thing. Hashem gives chokhmah. And why? Because it will save you from getting involved with guys. And what's the problem with those guys? The guys is that ha'uzvim orchot yosher, the second paragraph on the second column. Because they're going to do all kinds of sins, you'll follow after them. And then when we want to talk about a specific sin, comparing that to we have a general idea of don't sin, and then all of a sudden, why does Mishlei get involved in a specific issue of adultery? Why is it narrowing itself down? And if you take a look at Rashi, he asks the same question. Rashi says, Isha Zara is a metaphor. What does he say it is? A knesia shel apikursut, hi aminut. V'lo yitachein lomar shelo diber ela al hamana efet mamash. It's not, and what's that word, ela? It's not that he's only talking about the adulterator. Why? Why would you pick that one sin and not all kinds of other sins? More so because the previous section was talking about the panoply, the great scope of doing the right thing and the wrong thing. So why am I going to zero down on this one issue of the woman? It's too narrow. But the word Ella is very important, which means Rashi believes, and I think Rashi is right, is that the answer to the question, is it a metaphor or is the woman a metaphor for something deeper? Or is the woman a good advice to a person not to get involved with other people's wives or the inappropriate woman because it will take you away from Torah and from Yiras Hashem? What is the answer to that question? Is it this or that? So what, according to Rashi, what's the answer? Yeah, go ahead, say it. It's both. It's both. Why not? That's the beautiful thing about metaphor. That's what Rashi says at the beginning of Shir Shirim. Echad diber Elohim v'shtayim zu shamati. God could say one thing, and the whole beautiful about metaphor is not only could it be its literal meaning and it's what it refers to, it could actually be referring to multiple things. That's the beauty of the whole thing. And now I want to show you. So the question is, but wait a second, where's my crutch? Does that mean that Mishlei is like Shir HaShirim, that I'm never told what X equals Y, and I have to just believe essentially that it must be talking about deeper meanings than just a beloved? Or is it like Eicha, where I'm said that Yerushalayim Kenida Hayata, where I have my translation layer? Where's my translation layer here? Where is my X equals Y? And the answer to your question is, I've been talking about the second... I'll tell you in a second. I've been talking about the second woman of Mishlei, but now I'd like to talk about the first woman of Mishlei. We meet her at the beginning and at the end of, we're on page number 9, so flip over to page number 9. We meet her at the beginning and the end of chapter, we meet her in chapter 1, at the end of chapter 1 in verse 20, and we meet her in chapter 9 again. She makes two appearances. This evil woman, this other person's wife, this foreign woman, and by the way, I would translate the word Zara, not as a foreigner woman literally, but in the same way that Nadav and Avihu brought Eish Zara, which means an inappropriate fire, one that didn't fit the norm, what was acceptable. That's what I think Zara means here. And the Dat Mikra, he actually believes, is talking about a woman who's not Jewish, and I think that misses the whole point. So here we meet this... Oh, wait a second. Not page 8. Page 9. Oh, my... Hold on a second. I better have brought her down. Oh, yeah, here it is. Sorry, page 8. Did I say it? There's a picture of blind justice. You see blind justice? Okay. Chochmot Bachut Tarona. It's a woman named Chochmot. Now, based on her name, it's quite clear what she's a metaphor of. What is she a metaphor of? Wisdom. Which in Mishlei is translated as Yirat Hashem. Wisdom, Yirat Hashem. And that's another shear of where does God, where does fear and fear of God, and where's wisdom and wisdom of the Torah, where does it start and stop? Are they completely equivalent? But this is a woman. By the way, how do we know she's a woman? Because you're about to see she is an anthropomorphized, she's a real woman doing real things. We'll see. They named her Chochmot. They couldn't name her Chochmah because that's an abstract concept. So they named her Chochmot so that we, that is Shlomo named her Chochmot so that we would know who she was a metaphor for. And it will be quite clear as we read. Chochmot bachutz tarona. She cries out outside. Bar chovot titein kola. Now the word rechov in biblical Hebrew means the town square. Just inside the gates, there was a big time square after the word rachav or wide. In modern Hebrew, it means a street. My guess is the etymology from square, city square, to street probably came because I always think when I see the cardo that somehow, you know, where the shopping was done moved from maybe the square right in front of the gates of the city to maybe a long street that carried the same kind of shopping functionality. It could be where the etymology moved from one thing to the other. But essentially in Tanakh, when you see Rechobot, it doesn't mean street. It means town square. So she's in the town square and titain kola. That is, she's quite clear she's a woman. Berosh homiot tikra. She cries over all of the bluster of the city. What we'll find out at the end, what we don't have time for, is the homiyah is being created by that other woman. It's all tied together in chapter 9. But right now we can just assume that there's a bustle of selling and buying and all kinds of noise in the city. And she's making her voice heard. And the reason why she's doing that is because she's going to say to them, you heard my voice. Don't tell me that I wasn't talking loud enough. At the opening of the gates, which is, of course, where judgment was done in ancient cities, Amareha Tomer, she says her words. And here is her words. Ad matayp ta'im ta'ehevu peti. Until when, O fools, will you love your foolishness? V'leitzim, and you scorners, you mockers, latzon chamdu, will you la'em, you'll desire your mocking. Uksilim, and your fools, yisnu dat, will reject, yisnu, probably not the word hate knowledge, but probably reject knowledge. Tashuva l'tochachi, come back to my teaching. Hinei abi elacham, I will teach you. I'll tell you everything I know. Abi elacham ruchi, I'll tell you my whole spirit. Odia dvarai etchem, I will communicate with you as much as you want. I'll tell you every word I have. Yan karati vatimainu, but because I called you and you refused. I lost my place. Yan karati vatimainu, natiti adi, I stretched my hand out to you. Vein makshiv, and nobody is listening. Vatifru kolatzati, you heard my advice, but you rejected it. You did not agree to accept my musar, my hochacha, which means my teaching. Gam ani beidchem eschak. So I will laugh when your troubles come, when your fear, eidchem to be troubles or fear. El ad bivo pachtechem. When your fear comes, I'm just going to make fun of you. Bivo kishoah, the second word, sorry, not the first word. Kishoah pachtechem, when it comes as a destruction, as a desolation. Ve'edchem kisufa ye'etah, and the aid will come like a storm. Bivo alechem sarah v'tzukah. Let me tell you something, you guys and girls who are not listening to me. Mi chochma. Believe me, you're going to get yours. And look what she says. It's so funny. She's so personalized. Az yikra'un nini. Do you see that double nun? As yikra'un nini v'lo enel. Oh, then you'll call for my help, but I won't answer. Yishacharun nini. You'll pray to me. V'lo yimtza'un nini. But you won't find me. You see the na na na? You know what she's saying? Na 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 na. That's what she's saying. Na 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 na. It's so beautiful. She's such a real person. She's frustrated. She taught me everything she had to know. She's a real human. You can see her frustration and also her of a certain pleasure in seeing bad guys get what they got, what they deserve, considering that they could have done better. Tachaki sanu dat, because you rejected knowledge. Virat Adonai lo bachari, did not choose the fear of God. Lo avula atzati, she's chokhmah, by the way. She's not God herself. She is the wisdom that comes from God. Na'atu kol tachati, you scorned all of my teachings. V'yochlumi pri.com, you will eat your own fruit. Which means, you know what gets bad guys? The very produce that they create. It's not happenstance. They produce the evil and they wind up, it turns around in them and bites them. Umimo atzoteham, and all of their plans, the things that they build, yisbao, that's what will fill them up. And then she says why. Ki meshuvah p'taim targem. It is the satisfaction, it is the sense of everything's okay, which is what kills the fool. The shalvat k'silim ta'abdeim. And the fool that sins, who thinks, oh, nobody's going to catch me. Everything will be okay. I can do what I want and everything's fine. That, what bothers her is the sense of complacence. That's a word. Complacence. V'shomea li yishkon betach. The one who listens to me dwells in peacefully. V'shanan mi pachad ra'ah. And the one who is too satisfied, I'm sorry, and the person who listens to me will be sha'anan, will be safe, mi pachad ra'ah, from terrible fear. We meet her again at the end, and we don't really have time to do it, so I would ask you to go ahead and take a look at she's juxtaposed, the evil woman at the very last chapter is juxtaposed, the same words. They're both sitting in the karet, which is the short term for the city. They're both saying the same words, except where the good woman is reaching out, and they're both reaching out to the same people. She's reaching out, the chokhmat is reaching out to the fools to get them to stop being foolish. And you would think, and this Isha Zaran chapter 9 is reaching out to the foolish because she wants to help them continue down their path. And they're juxtaposed. What that means is that Mishlei, what it did for us, is by introducing, it does something really terrific here. And that's why I gave a picture of blind justice. God could have just said, or Shlomo could have just said, listen, I'm going to talk about Chochmah. Let me tell you about a lecture of Chochmah. And half the people will be like, I want you to listen to this, I want you to do this, keep Shabbat, do this, that, and people will be sleeping all day long. But he gives this woman not only personality, but a na 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 personality. I mean, like, she's a real woman. You could see her standing on the chair saying, don't steal from that person, don't do that, don't do that. And by giving her a reality, by turning Chochmah not into an abstract concept, but into Chochmot, which is a real person who represents all of those things, it takes on a meaning that only metaphor can deliver. Only metaphor can deliver that. Because only metaphor brings something, it only anthropomorphizes, it brings to life, it gives you something you can feel and touch rather than an abstract concept. Once we're clued into her, then when we meet the Isha Zara, in my humble opinion, then we know it's not just about adultery. And sure, it's probably about adultery also. It is a pretty big sin that a person should be careful about. But if she, so I ask you a question, use the math again. If the woman we meet in chapter 1, Chochmah, represents the Chochmah of God, then what does the Isha Zara represent if she's diametrically opposed to that? Then she is somebody? It's your metaphor. You could never know. What's the right answer? I don't know. Then what is she a metaphor for? I said that she's a metaphor. For what? Nitzara seems like a viable possibility. Another idea? Could be foolishness. Could be a rejection of Chochmah, which seems to be what Mishlei is going after. It's not just your average fool. It's somebody who actually rejects, who knows Torah and rejects it. But the idea of, I'm sorry, I guess I didn't say that, but this idea of this woman having this slippery tongue, oh, it's okay, it just breaks Shabbat once. See, now it's not just, oh, come into my house and my husband's not there. And there's a little piece like that. She says, my husband won't be back 15 days. We have plenty of time to sleep around. But all of a sudden it's, God's not looking. He won't know. If I don't do this, if I don't do that. If she's a metaphor for somebody who sucks you into doing any kind of sin or rejecting any chokmah, then I think it's much more effective. I think that's why Moshe probably wrote, Shlomo wrote the book of Mishlei is Mishlei. The challenge with Mishlei is that whenever you're reading something, I think it would be foolish not to think that it's also literally true, but I think we would miss the point if we didn't realize that whenever reading about these women or these men or anything else, that there may be a metaphor behind. Now, that may leave you seeking for things that don't exist. But if we take it back to Yeshayahu, I think if you just read it as uppity women that like to wear lots of makeup and jewelry, then I really and not realize that very often women are used as a metaphor for rejection of Torah or for rejection of humbleness or whatever it is, I think we wind up missing a very important point that Yeshayahu is trying to make and Shlomo HaMelech as well. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, I would take it a bit more concretely as
I believe there's a parshan that actually says that Isha Zara is a metaphor for Avodah Zara. I can't remember, was it Eben Ezra? No, Eben Ezra says she's a woman. Ki anashim nechnasot ima anashim bebrit hashem. Oh. Yeah, I want to say Eben Ezra. I don't know if it's in this Eben Ezra that I brought down, but I want to say that Eben Ezra may... Yeah, I don't know if it's in Eben Ezra, but I remember seeing a parshan that believes that she is a metaphor for Avodah Zarah.
Rashi goes bigger. He says mutes in general. Anybody who rejects God.
Which I think, to me, that sounds right. But you're right, from the word Zarah, Nochriah, there certainly might be a sense of Avodah Zarah, and that's the focus. Of course, then you're limiting the whole flow of these first eight chapters to directly believe in God and serving God and directly rejecting God, which is perfectly fine. If you broaden it out to minut like Rashi does, then it could be any kind of attaching oneself to any mitzvot. The umbrella spreads much wider, although it may narrow a certain sharpness that if you limit it to Avodah Zarah and Avodah Hashem, that it satisfies. But you would agree, though, that it's a metaphor. Okay. Good. Yay. So I didn't fail in my shiur. Very good. Okay, that's pretty. If any, I spent a lot of time talking and a lot of time taking questions. Any other questions? I'd be happy to answer them. Okay. Anyway, it was nice coming here and teaching. And have a wonderful day. Have a nice day.